Welcome to Attention Talk Radio, the show centered around paying attention to attention, with your host, Attention Coach Jeff Copper.
Welcome, everybody, to this edition of Attention Talk Radio. I'm your host, Attention Coach Jeff Copper, and with me in my virtual studio is my co-host, Kirsten Milliken. Kirsten, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing this evening, Jeff?
I'm doing spectacular. I'm going to learn how to remember what I've got to do in the future, which is really going to be helpful for me tonight since I don't know a lot about memory. Because our topic tonight is remembering to remember and how to remember with Dr. Ari Tuckman in our virtual studio, who's a frequent flyer on our show. We've had him back, and these are the types of topics I love to have him on. He's very bright, he's very articulate, and really got some good insights. Real quickly, though, the date stamp the show today is Wednesday, October the 24th in the year 2012 at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And let's just kind of go through our announcements. In 2 weeks from tonight, I actually will be on an airplane on my way to San Francisco for the CHAD conference. If you haven't signed up, you should. And to learn more about that, go to chadd.org. Have no fear, though. We will have an Attention Talk Radio show that night. We have a pre-recorded show with the people from Impact ADHD on coaching parents to coach their kids, which is we've already taped it. It's a spectacular show, and I encourage you to watch it. But hopefully you'll be on an airplane headed to San Francisco or driving yourself, and we'll see you there. Let's see. Next, Kirsten. You want to just touch base. As everybody knows, we're kind of branching out a little bit. You know Attention Talk Radio, and now we have Attention Talk News, which is kind of a news-type format that's being sent out. Our last edition was just dropped the other day. Kirsten, you want to touch base on what that's all about?
Yes, I would love to touch base, Jeff. Attention Talk Newsletter, we are incorporating not just the text, information about the shows that have just recently happened and what's coming up so you can keep track of that. But there's also a video this month, or this edition has got the first Attention Talk video, which is on YouTube as well. So you can watch Jeff and Dr. Parker talking about medications and ADHD. And there's also an attention teaser, which is always fun to try and figure out. There are links to some of the other information that's going on. And right now we're working on a web page so that we can add a little bit more content. And last, I do want to start talking about, Jeff, is the fact that we are in the planning stages for having an online scavenger hunt, which is going to be announced through the newsletter. So I strongly urge everybody to subscribe to the newsletter, forward it to your friends so that everybody can participate in this online scavenger hunt. It's going to be a lot of fun. And we'll be doing that before the end of the year.
And it's going to be a lot of fun. And everybody, we are building some stuff. The easiest way to go sign up for Attention Talk News right now is if you just go to attentiontalknews.com. Disregard the copy in the middle a little bit, but you can go there on the left. You just put in your email address, and you'll get this thing sent to you. And the scavenger hunt is going to be kind of fun. Basically, we're going to come up with a whole bunch of questions for you out there and test your knowledge on Attention Talk Radio, Attention Talk Video, some other stuff that's really out there. And I think it's going to be kind of a lot of fun. I know that I've been sitting down having to kind of come up with some of the questions, and it's taken me back. Way back into our archives was real fun questions, so that's real exciting. And Kirsten's kind of heading up everything on Attention Talk News, and I'm real excited about it. She's doing a really good job, and there's a lot of variety. And the attention teasers are real fun because I think they really kind of illustrate when you go do those how what's obvious is a function of what you pay attention to. And after all these medias all are about attention, and we've had Dr. Ari Tuckman on talking about what is attention and what is intuition and stuff before. And it's a process. It's a choice. It's a thing. And it's something to be managed. So, again, check out Attention Talk News. Also, out there, we're expanding into video. I'm heading up Attention Talk Video, your ADHD talk show station. And to access it, just go to attentiontalkvideo.com, and you can see our last two episodes. One with Dr. Parker on ADHD meds, and today we released Interviewing to Win with Wilma Fellman, and next week we're going to release a pre-recorded show that we've done with Dr. Tuckman on metacognition, which was a great show and a lot of fun to do. So we got a lot going on, Kirsten. I don't even know how we sleep.
How I get anything else done. But I know that you're working a lot on this, so between the two of us, yeah, it's a full-time job, but it's a lot of fun, so that helps.
I have to tell you, it's very inspirational to drive us doing this because we continue to we do get records on show downloads and stuff, and we've been setting records going back for a while. And this month in particular, we've already beaten our best month record, and we still have a couple weeks to go, or another week to go, and it's all to our listeners. And everybody who's pasting on our Facebook page and commenting on the comment, all that stuff is motivation for us to try to come up with new topics and get good guests in and reoccurring guests. So thank you for that for everybody.
Cause you're the one giving me a raise, right?
Yes, I'm going to double your salary.
Excellent.
Well, with that being said, we got to get into memory. So without further ado, Kirsten, you want to introduce our guest tonight?
I would love to introduce Ari. Ari Tuckman is a clinical psychologist who specializes in diagnosing and treating children, teens, and adults with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. He has written three books that I frequently refer to and send my clients to. The first one is Understand Your Brain, Get More Done, the ADHD Executive Functions Workbook. The previous one was More Attention, Less Deficit, Success Strategies for Adults with ADHD. And then finally, Integrative Treatment for Adults with ADHD, a practical guide, which is actually for clinicians. He gives lots of talks around town, and I understand that he's going to be one of the speakers at CHAD coming up in a couple of weeks. Dr. Tuckman, what's the presentation that you're doing there?
You know, I'm actually doing two. The first one is Real Motivation for Real Change, which is going to be a whole lot of fun. And then I'm actually doing a similar presentation of what we're talking about tonight on prospective memory called Remember to Remember, Right Thing, Right Time, Right Place.
So we're kind of getting the jump on this, getting you before the CHAD conference.
You are. And then this way I can steal all your good ideas from tonight and make the CHAD presentation even better.
Steal our good ideas. No, we don't have ideas. We facilitate insight for you to pull it out of you, Ari. That's
there
the way
you go.
Right there. Yeah. So I just, to get into this thing real quickly, I got to tell you, Ari, I've been anxious to do the show because I'm really not very schooled on attention. As I told you before we just got on air, to me, I know that you have to pay attention to something. You have to register something. You got to pay attention to it in order to remember it. And the more emotional attachment to it you have, the higher probability that you'll remember it, although you did say if there's too much, you might not. And I know there's working memory and long-term memory, but that's other than just dealing with people practically on how to do it, I don't know a lot about the background and research. So tonight you want to talk about prospective memory, right?
I do.
Can you talk about memory and put prospective memory in the context of memory? Because I think there's a lot of different kinds of memory so that we know what we're talking about, and then we can kind of get into the detail of it.
Absolutely. So, you know, prospective memory is really – to me, it's a really interesting topic because as much as on the one hand, you can really kind of get into kind of academic sort of stuff and, you know, these really kind of crazy psychology studies that don't really seem to resemble real life, prospective memory is something that we use all the time. So as academic as it can be, it's really a totally practical kind of thing. And prospective memory is the process by which we take an idea or an intention to do one thing or to do something from this moment in time forward into a future moment in time. So that could be something as simple as I'm going to check my email, and then as soon as I look, I need to go and, you know, let the dog back in or something. So it could be a matter of a couple seconds, or it could be a matter of a year or more. You know, so for example, I don't know, I live in Westchester, Pennsylvania. For some strange reason, the quarterly local estimated taxes for the third quarter are due on October 31st. So that's something that I need to remember to send in my local estimated taxes, which is completely not worth knowing except for one day out of the year. You know, so on October 31st, it's important to know it, but the other 364 days is not worth knowing. So, it's our prospective memory that allows us to kind of carry these intentions forward. You can basically think of it as kind of a mental to-do list. So, you know, we have our written to-do lists, which are great, but sometimes you need to rely on a mental to-do list to kind of scribble down some notes and carry it forward.
So prospective memory is forward thinking. I need to remember to do something in the future as opposed to recalling something from the past?
Exactly. So it's not long-term memory. And, you know, long-term memory involves things like you know, could be episodic memories from your life, as in, you know, I grew up on Columbus Drive, I went to McKay Elementary School, you know, so those are elements of my life, or, you know, remember that time when, whatever, whatever.
Yep.
Or it could be more factual knowledge. So things like, you know, the capital of Pennsylvania is Harrisburg, for example.
Yep.
You know, so that's long-term memory, and that's stuff that's, just like you said, it's from the past. But what we're talking about now is really remembering into the future.
So we have recall from the past. We're talking about prospective memory tonight. We're going to go into more detail. That's the future. And then there's kind of working memory, and that's when you're sitting there, you're holding information, like you're gathering information and organizing it in your head in that particular moment. Is that right? So that's kind of like the now, in the now?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I'm just sort of thinking of this now, so Jeff, you're already doing your job to make my presentation better. In some ways, working memory is what bridges the past and the future over a very short period of time.
Uh-huh.
In other words, you know, working memory is something that we hold information for a short amount of time, process it, perhaps do something with it, and then out it goes, and it gets kind of replaced by new information. So kind of the simplest example of working memory is when you look at a phone number on a piece of paper, and then you put it into your head, and then you type it out onto your phone keypad.
Yep.
You know, so that's working memory that's holding that from, you know, a second ago or 5 seconds ago.
Got it. So in a big picture, we have recall memory, we have holding information for the now, and tonight we're going to really kind of focus a lot on prospective memory, and that's remembering something in the future, whether it's to let the dog out after you send the email or remembering to renew your driver's license in a couple of years, right?
Yep, exactly.
Kirsten, before we kind of move into details, you got any questions in this space?
No, I was thinking, I'm trying not to be a smarty pants because I love reading, and so today I took all my extra time and was reading up on prospective memories because there was some recent research that was put out and a review of some of this. So I was actually interested in the fact that, because to me, prospective memory would involve some working memory because you have to try and hold that information and sometimes and use it sometimes. And so I thought they would be related, and I just quickly glanced at one article where they did some brain research and actually found out that they're actually discrete parts of the brain that hold working memory and prospective memory.
And that's one of the things that I'm learning about this is memory is kind of complicated, and moving forward with a conversation, Dr. Tuckman, we're talking about prospective memory, so you use the word intention. I got to remember everybody out there, you know, I'm Mr. Attention. David Gwork is Mr. Intention, and don't forget Alan Brown out there is Mr. Detention. Go dig back on our shows to our interview with Alan Brown on that, and you'll have a good time with it. But this is about intentions and forward thinking. So can you tell us a little bit more about what prospective memory is and how it works, and we'll kind of go from there.
Sure. You know, and it's really kind of interesting because, you know, Kristen, in the reading that you were doing, you know, what's interesting about this is that it turns out that our brain has two different mechanisms when it comes to prospective memory, which on the one hand is just really kind of cool that our brain is, you know, developed enough to figure this out, that there are two different mechanisms depending on what it is that we're trying to remember, or more specifically, how long we're trying to remember it. So if it's a very short prospective memory task, meaning as soon as I check my email, I have to let the dog in, or I don't know, I'm going to pour myself a cup of coffee as I'm making breakfast, but I got to check the eggs again. So as I pour my coffee, I'm remembering, check the eggs, check the eggs, check the eggs, check the eggs. Now, if my son interrupts me, I might, you know, that he may knock that intention out of my working memory, and then I don't check the eggs, and then I burn them. So if it's a short amount of time, it's working memory that holds it. And it works well, except it's vulnerable to disruption by interruptions, by other thoughts, by changing events. You know, so, for example, if you leave the room that, like if I were to, you know, if someone rings the doorbell, I leave the kitchen, it's more likely that I'm going to lose that idea out of working memory or out of my attention that I need to check the eggs. So So relying on working memory, it works, but it comes at a high processing cost. So it's more likely to be kind of disrupted and messed up. As opposed to longer periods of time, we don't use working memory because you're not going to hold in your mind for a day or a week, I have to remember to, you know, when I see my friend, you know, or I don't know, when I talk to Jeff, I have to remember to ask him this. When I remember see Jeff, I have to ask him this. When I see Jeff, I have to ask him this. So you're not going to repeat that to yourself for an entire week. So in that case, what it does is we rely on our long-term memory. So we create an idea, an association that when I talk to Jeff, remember to ask him, I don't know, what he's doing at the Chad conference or something. So I sort of create that association. It sits in my long-term memory. Now all of a sudden I'm talking to Jeff and I go, oh, wait, there was some, what was that? You know, so it's kind of like it gives that tickle of an idea, mm-hmm. and that is what sparks off the prospective memory. So, you know, so we use different mechanisms for very short periods of time compared to longer periods of time.
So you were talking about disruptors when you were mm-hmm. talking about the short-term memory.
Mm-hmm.
Are there certain kinds of disruptors that are more likely to kind of get you off track, forgetting what you're trying to remember?
Yeah, actually there are. So, you know, anything that engages your attention more fully is more likely to either knock the intention out of working memory, if it's a short-term event. You know, so I don't know, if I'm making eggs if I have to remember to check the eggs and all of a sudden the fire alarm goes off in the house, you know, clearly the eggs go, you know, or I don't know, there's a massive car accident in front of my house. You know what? I don't care about the eggs at that point. They're off my radar screen. but also in terms of longer term things, if, you know, I have this idea of, oh, when I talk to Jeff, I have to remember to ask him about the Chad conference. And then I call up and all of a sudden we get into this really interesting conversation about something or other, something else. That idea of the Chad conference goes out of my head because I've been sort of, my attention is being co-opted by this other topic. And, you know, there's no space for that little reminder, that association of ask Jeff about Chad. It never kind of pops up because my attention is consumed with this other thing that we're talking about.
You know, Dr. Sutton, this is just a fascinating conversation with me, and I'm going to pause and kind of go back to you and I did a show a year ago on what is attention.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, you can't pay attention to more than one thing at a time. And so it's kind of like there's a competition for your attention, and you get crowded out by different distractions and different things, and trying to stay the course is a really, really kind of think what we're talking about and the focus here. Furthermore, whenever I'm working with somebody, we always do a learning exercise at the beginning because I want to understand how they naturally learn and process information. And I was working with an individual one time who was a writer, and it was interesting because they would be writing, and every once in a while they would lose their working memory. They would kind of erase, and we realized is that when there was a loud noise, like a door slamming or something like that, it was startled. It's almost like this person was very sensitive to sound. And it would distract them and take them away, and their memory would evaporate, and they would come back and have to start over. And it was interesting because we ended up realizing we could put earplugs in or use white noise in the background with a fan or a vacuum cleaner or something because it would kind of drown that stuff out, which is these are practical things that we deal with, but it kind of goes back, and it's kind of related to kind of what you're talking about here is that, you know, you can get off on these things, and it crowds it out, if you will, and you kind of can't get back in. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, what's going on there is it's a working memory dump that, you know, he had the idea in mind of this is where I'm going with the next sentence.
Yep.
Something like a loud noise would disrupt him, and that would then consume his attention. That would fill his working memory, and it would push out whatever else it was that he was intending to do. It's kind of the equivalent of you know, if you're working on your computer, let's say your laptop, and you pull the battery out or you knock it out by accident, or if your power goes out on a plugged-in computer, and like, boom, all that stuff is gone out of the RAM memory in the computer, that's the equivalent of our working memory. So,
And I got to have a plug here. For those old people, if you really want to go dig back in our archives, we did a show with Dan Pruvit, comparing computer like processor, like you got a a Ferrari processor and you got no RAM and you have to externalize it. We talked about hard drives, which kind of goes to this. So if you want to go digging, it was really a fun show and a fun metaphor to illustrate what you're talking about. Dr. Pryor, I don't mean to kind of cut you off, but I need to kind of go to a break real quick before we spend here all night. Before we go, for anybody who wants to get your books, learn more about you, I presume the best place to go to is still www.adultadhdbook.com. Is that right?
That is.
All right, everybody. And with that, we'll be right back after these messages.
Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
We are CHAD, the nation's leading nonprofit organization serving individuals with or impacted by ADHD. At CHAD, we provide information and help families and professionals to improve the lives of those with ADHD. On November 8th through 10th, CHAD will have its annual conference in San Francisco, California. If you are impacted by ADHD, this is a must-attend event. For details, go to chad.org. Interested in exhibitor and program opportunities? Call Barbara Rose at 240-487-2314.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is TimeTimer.com.
You deserve the best-trained ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to ADDCA.com and click on Find a Coach.
Train your brain with Brain Train. ADHD impacts grades, relationships, and the quality of life for your kids. Parents now have a new way to improve the lives of their ADHD child without using meds. Brain Train is designed to exercise your child's mind, to train it to work differently and efficiently. Learn how Brain Train can make a change by training your child's brain. Visit Brain Train at www.brain-train-adhd.com for more information today.
You're listening to Attention Talk Radio. And now, back to the show.
Welcome back, everybody, to this edition of Attention Talk Radio. We're here with Dr. Ari Tuchman having a great conversation on prospective memory. Ari, I kind of cut you off there for a second just because I had to kind of get to a break and I didn't interrupt your train of thought. And I know Kirsten's got a question right now, so I hope that you can remember what you were going to remember because Kirsten would like to ask the question, and we'll see if you can come back and deliver on your intention, okay?
Sounds good.
He's already forgotten. So most of what you're talking about, the disruptions that you've been talking about are kind of unexpected disruptions. So, you know, the alarm goes off, the fire alarm goes off, or there's a loud noise, or the power goes down, or whatever. What about those kinds of disruptions that are actually intentional, like when we're multitasking? How does that affect prospective memory?
Oh, that absolutely affects prospective memory. That the more engaged you are in other activities, the less likely you are to remember to do that thing that you're intending to do. And when we're jumping around between multiple things, it's much, much easier to have, you know, for things to kind of slide through the cracks then. So, you know, so this is one of the problems with multitasking. And the reason is that when we multitask, unless it's just really kind of easy automatic kinds of stuff, like, you know, folding laundry and watching TV, probably most people can do that pretty easily because neither folding laundry nor watching TV kind of redlines our processing abilities. But if you're doing tasks that involve more of your processing power, the more of it that's absorbed, the more of your processing power that's already being used, the less you have available to hold on to that intention of, I have to do this, I have to do this, I have to do this, in the case of working memory, or you have less available to give you that, to kind of notice that time and place has come and to say, oh, yeah, I was going to do something about that.
So I'm just thinking for people with ADHD, I mean, we've talked about the fact that, you know, struggles with working memory for people with ADHD is pretty common. And I would say a lot of people that I know that have ADHD also love to multitask. They're convinced that that's working for them. is that where, you know, and we'll always say, like, you know, I'm going to do that. I intend to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And following through is another problem with ADHD. Is there a relationship between all of that?
Yeah, I think there absolutely is. That, you know, multitasking, either on purpose because you're kind of seeking that extra kind of stimulus jolt,
mm-hmm.
or because doing that one task is so painfully boring that you need to kind of dilute it out, like the spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down, with these
yep.
other activities. So sometimes it's an intentional sort of thing in the sense of, like, this is the only way I can get this done. But I think at other times it's a little bit less intentional in the sense that there's a difference between making the choice to multitask versus having great difficulty not multitasking. And, you know, sometimes what gets put under the umbrella of multitasking is really just distractibility. You know, being distracted and pulled off onto other things is not exactly multitasking, if we're going to be honest here. Like, that's a bit of a different process. You know, so getting interrupted, or by which I mean interrupting yourself in the middle of doing one task and then wandering off onto doing something else and then wandering off and doing something else, that's not really kind of true multitasking, I wouldn't say. But, you know, the more of these distractions and temptations that are pulling at your attention, the less likely you are to remember the intention to do something else in the future. And sometimes it's not a big deal, as in, like, I don't know, what happened to me a couple of days ago. Like, oh, there's that band. They, you know, I'm really interested in them. They haven't put an album out in a while. You know, I should just kind of do a quick search and see if they have any albums out. Now, I can go a year and still live a good life without knowing if this band has an album out or not, you know. But so that's not really that important. But other things like, you know, I have to call the bank before 4 because I got an important question for them. If I call after 4, they're not there, so it doesn't do me any good. So something like that, if I'm in the midst of a bunch of other stuff, it's easy for even something like that to get squeezed out.
You made an interesting comment, and I have to put a little word out here to one of my clients who was sitting here right before the show, and we were talking about multitasking, and she said, telling somebody with ADHD not to multitask is like telling a drug addict to stop using drugs.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I said, I'm going to use that one. So I, you perfectly set it up and said multitasking sometimes is like a stimulus jolt, and some
yeah.
people just can't help but multitask. So, you know,
well,
they're themselves up to have problems with prospective memory.
Well,
I
can't help but chime in here, and everybody, I don't mean to kind of confuse you, but there's a lot of stuff kind of between. Number one, I got to say this in the show. A couple years ago, Dr. Tuckman, I read an article that I think Ned Holloway wrote talking about attention deficit traits, and that was about people who were starting to exhibit symptoms of ADHD, but they didn't have it. And he called it ADT, attention deficit
mm-hmm.
traits, because our world was getting – it's coming out – because I remember when I first got in the working world, you know, I had mail, I had a fax machine, and maybe 2 telephones. Now you got multiple emails. I got – work phone,
yeah.
home phone, Google Voice, I got text, I got instant messaging, you got Facebook direct message, you got treat. I mean, it's coming at me from all over the place, and it's kind of crazy to kind of manage it. And I want to pause here for a second, that this multitasking thing that we think that we can kind of do, earlier you said the more you got going on, the less you can remember. And I do want to offer up, did you ever hear that paper that he wrote on attention deficit traits?
Yeah, I have actually, and I think I haven't read it, but yeah, I mean, absolutely, our world has become much more, I don't know, it places much greater demands on our attention. And, or by, well, actually, let me be more accurate. It places much greater demands on our attention regulation processes, in the sense that all these distractions pull hard at our attention, and it therefore takes more effort in order to keep your attention where it should be.
And I really like what you said, but I want to kind of touch base. I got all kinds of shows. If you're listening to this right now, Dr. Tuckman and I did a show a year ago on attention. You can only pay attention to one thing, so there's more things that are competing for your attention, at least to me.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're sitting down, you used to not have all the distractions. We say it's distractions, but everything's competing for your attention, so you're pinging all over the place. And it was a great philosophical conversation. I think I learned a lot from that conversation, Dr. Tupman. We had that. But we also did a show about a month before that with Greg Kirch. I forget the title of the show. It was meditation, but we actually did some exercises where you sit and you notice an object for a period of time, and you notice how your attention wanders and you bring it back. And to me, that's an attention exercise. You're learning. You become conscious. You're thinking. You're noticing your thoughts draw away from it, and then you kind of bring it back. And as I had learned from Dr. Kirsch before that, I thought meditation was this really Zen-like type thing. And he said, no, it's the exercise of bringing your attention back to what you intend to pay attention to. And I'm saying this because in that same show, we talked about the difference between passive attention and directive attention. And passive attention is what's being presented to you. Like if you're driving down the road and, you know, you rubberneck because it's there, you didn't go looking for it, just happened to be there. But directed attention is willfully going up somewhere to look for stuff. I'm saying all this stuff because our show tonight is a lot about remembering how to remember. We also did a show with David Now a couple months ago about how exactly did you do that, and you could say how exactly did you remember that. It's the same thing. And all this is a big lead up to this one thing, and that is if you have ADHD and you want to move forward, the greatest single thing that you can do is learn the skill of paying attention to what you're paying attention to, or as we're going to release next week with Dr. Tuckman, is what metacognition is, because to be able to notice your thoughts and to pay attention to what you're remembering and how you're remembering it is really the key to some of this stuff, because nobody can see what you're paying attention to other than yourself. And Dr. Tuckman, what I heard earlier tonight is you've got these short-term things and you've got these long-term things, and my sense is some things might distract you more than others. But if you just become passive and reactive in this process, you're going to become overloaded. But if you take control and, like, stop and notice what you're thinking and notice how you're remembering and listen to this prospective stuff, and I think we're going to get to some tips here in a second, then you can begin to manage your attention and manage your memory for the first time. Now, with all that being said, does that make sense to you? Or am I missing something, or am I off my rocker?
No, I think you're absolutely right. And, you know, my thing as a psychologist is I want to help people make well-informed, thought-out decisions about what they want to do. I don't really care what they do. I just want them to use a good process for that decision.
Yep.
So, you know, as long as that's the case, then, you know, if you're using a good process, you're more likely to come to a good decision. So, you know, if it's a matter of you know, if you're multitasking, for example, if it makes boring activities more palatable and therefore you're more likely to persist with them and finish them, knock yourself out. Like, that is a good thing. But by the same token, I think it's a matter of being aware of, you know, what is the price I'm paying for this, you know, and that anything we do, there's a gain, but there's also a price. So if you're multitasking, you have to be aware of the fact that depending on what it is that you're doing, one activity may be coming at the cost of quality of another activity, or it may come at the cost of not being aware of the time or not finishing one activity because you're spending your time among three or four activities. Or in the case of today's show, prospective memory, that, you know, if you're remembering, okay, before I send that email, I have to remember to go back and reread the first paragraph, or I have to remember to attach that document, or I have to remember to whatever. If you've got a bunch of other stuff going on, you're less likely to remember to do that last little thing. It gets sent off, and, you know, it's missing something, or it's not the email you really would have hoped to have sent. So I think it's a matter of making kind of good choices, and you're absolutely right. This is where metacognition comes in. It's the ability to think about your thinking, to know how you think, to know how you process information, to know what circumstances you perform better in and what circumstances take away from your performance.
To know that I get distracted by sound or I get distracted by drama or something like that more easily than some other things. Or it's easier for me to remember something if I say it out loud.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had some people that literally, if they said it, I'm going to put my keys in the refrigerator, they would remember that because they said it.
Right.
We kind of log in. So when I leave the house later today, I need to go get my keys out of the refrigerator. That's a way that they would remember it, because they witness in their own mind how they remember that, as opposed to trying to put it on that hook. Well, somebody else said to put it on the hook, but if your brain doesn't work that way,
mm-hmm.
then you're not you're not recognizing how you do it. So this, I'm confusing everybody here. The metacognition is knowing how that you do it naturally and realizing the distractions, and these are the types of things that if I say it out loud in this example, then that's how I remember some stuff and I can execute my intention moving forward, because that is prospective memory, right? Like, I'm going to get my keys out of the refrigerator when I want to leave, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I think that, you know, this is the value of getting a diagnosis that's accurate, first of all,
yep.
But then also really kind of understanding what it means, at least in the case of ADHD, that if you don't understand how it is that your brain works, you'll follow the presumably mostly well-intentioned advice from lots of other people whose brains perhaps work a little bit differently. So these strategies seem to work for this other person, therefore presumably they're going to work for you as well. So you wind up using strategies that just don't work for you. But you don't. The only way to know that is to really understand how your brain processes information, and that's where the diagnosis comes in, that you understand it better. You can then create the better situations for yourself.
Yep. And, you know, Kirsten, I didn't prompt him to say that.
Well, and like,
I preach along. When the obvious solution isn't working, you're paying attention to the wrong thing. And I got a bone to pick with everybody who puts out the top 10 list of obvious solutions, because when they do that, everybody pays attention to that. Nobody pays attention to number 11, 12.
Mm-hmm.
And most people, the top 10 list works for everybody who's the same as that works on the top 10 list. And if you're different, it's not going to work. So at the end of the day, if you're focused on the top 10 list and you're not like everybody else, you're paying attention to the wrong thing and you're not going to find your answer.
Well, and like, here's a great example. Roberto Olivardia, who's a psychologist, you've had him on the show.
Yeah, he's great.
Great,
he's
great guy. I remember talking to him. So he has ADHD. I don't. But so I was talking to him about working on, getting our dissertations done for our doctorate.
Uh-huh.
And the way he got his dissertation done was he wrote the entire thing in 2 weeks, and he did a split screen on his computer where he was writing on one half of the screen and had movies playing on the other half of the screen. Now, for me, this is the worst thing you could have ever done in terms of, like, disrupting my writing process.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I was like, how could you possibly – so my response to him was, how could you have possibly written your dissertation with movies playing on the side? And his response was, how could I possibly have written it without movies playing on the side? You know, and I think it's an awesome example of how knowing what worked for him – got it done. Now, it would have been a torture test for me, but you know what? He got his dissertation published into a book, so obviously it worked well, besides the fact that he also got his PhD with the dissertation. So, you know, it's one of those things that if he had listened to the kind of, like, conventional wisdom, they would have, like, reigned all over that idea. No way, no movies, that's insane. That would never work. It's only going to be distracting. You're not going to get your dissertation done. And, you know, he's walking proof that in this case, that crazy strategy was exactly what he needed.
And we've interviewed David Gwork a couple times at the ADD Coach Academy, and he tells the stories that when he was in college, he got through college rocking in a rocking chair, singing the notes.
Mm-hmm.
He was a very kinesthetic learner. He could remember things because, I mean, he's – we're getting a little away from perspective memory because he was trying to lock it into long-term memory, but because we're off on this little metacognition thing. But I brought the metacognition thing up because if you're going to act on your intentions to be able to focus in on and learn how you remember and how it works for you inside your head in a directed fashion as opposed to a reactive fashion is your tool to find what works for you.
Well, and tying it back into perspective memory, I think that – you know, what you said is exactly on target. So, you know, kind of we do a lot of autopilot through our days. So, you know, like the example of the keys, you know, finding your keys in the morning. If you have a designated place where your keys go, and on autopilot you just kind of chuck them there while you're walking by, and by the way, you've done this about a million times, There's virtually no memory of having done it. I mean, there are memories in the sense of, like, you know, I remember having thrown my keys there, you know, but it, that memory could be from today or yesterday or 4 years ago. But, you know, so you have these vague kind of blurred together memories of having done something. As opposed to, you know, like if somehow for some strange reason I were to put my keys in the fridge, you know, like my hands were full and I'm getting something out and I were to throw it down, in some ways I might actually be more likely to remember that because it stands out from the habitual action. But especially if I were to look at the keys in the fridge, see them sitting there, say to myself, ideally out loud, I'm leaving my keys in the fridge, and be really kind of intentional about creating, kind of burning that into my memory, then I would remember it, you know, or I'm much more likely to remember it tomorrow morning. As opposed to, if the reason why they wound up in the fridge was because I was carrying a bunch of stuff in, and I'm like cramming things into the fridge, and as I'm doing it, you know, the phone rings, and my wife asked me a question, dog's running around being crazy, and, you know, so I don't give it a lot of attention, then my prospective memory of I have to remember when I leave the house, I got to go to the fridge and get my keys, isn't there because it didn't really get burned in the first place. So, you know, memory involves in all kinds of memory. There's two processes. There's encoding, where the memory goes in, and there's retrieval when the memory goes out. And we can strengthen or disrupt both processes depending on sort of our intentionality and our level of interest and, you know, things of that sort.
Absolutely. Very well articulated. I want to reiterate is that that intentional thought of the refrigerator thing, that's directed attention where you're focused in on it, you're kind of like locked in, you know, higher likelihood of remembering some of that stuff as opposed to passively just kind of reacting to the environment. Dr. Tuckman, I need to go to another break. We come back, I want to talk about, you've got a few tips to kind of manage prospective memory that I'd like to kind of cover when we get back. But before we go to a break again, if anybody's got any, want to contact Dr. Tuckman, buy his book, learn more, he's got a ton of information at adultadhdbook.com. Just go there and plan on spending some time because he's got some great information and some really good stuff. And with that, we'll be right back after these messages.
You're listening to Attention Talk Radio. We'll return in a moment. Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
Experience the difference with a top-notch ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to addca.com and click on Find a Coach.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is timetimer.com.
We are CHAD, the nation's leading nonprofit organization serving the community impacted by ADHD. CHAD and Attention Magazine provide science-based information about ADHD to families, professionals, the media, and the general public. Attention is the only publication in which your paid advertising promotes the mission of leadership, advocacy, research, education, and support for the ADHD community. Interested? Advertise at Attention Magazine and CHAD's website at chadd.org or call 240-487-2314.
And now, back to Attention Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everybody, to this edition of Attention Talk Radio. Our listeners out there that are listening to us via the Internet, there's a chance that you're going to lose a signal in about 60 seconds. Our apologies. When that's done, just go back to attentiontalkradio.com. Hit the play button, move the thing up to 45 minutes into the show, and you'll be able to hear the end of it. We apologize, but I just got a message. It wasn't kind of coded right, so just be aware of that. Coming back to this, Dr. Tuckman, we've talked at the beginning of the talk, we talked about, you know, there's recall memory, there's working memory, there's prospective memory, which is intention. We talked about the distractions and some of the stuff. And towards the end of the last one, we started, in order to start to manage your memory and know what works to you, is to begin to notice in your mind what's working, and that we kind of touched on how attention plays into this, and what works for one person doesn't necessarily work for another. And I'm not a real big proponent of the top 10 obvious solutions, but I think they are helpful sometimes for those with ADHD because they need a place to begin. So I know you've got some tips like do it now. Can you just kind of walk us through some of these general type stuff? And everybody, we're going through these. Some of these might work for you. If they don't, it doesn't necessarily mean you're not. Just don't be stuck to this particular list. Look outside the box because there's other tips out there that can do it. But for the purposes of just generalities, Dr. Shotton, can you walk us through it?
Sure. Yeah, I think it's a matter of thinking of it as a Swiss Army knife. The more strategies you have in your, you know, at your disposal, the more likely one of them is going to be helpful for you in that particular situation. So it's not the definitive list, but, you know, the more tricks you got, the more likely you are to have the right trick for the situation.
Yep.
So one of them is, you know, it's the idea of do it now. In other words, don't hold it in prospective memory, just do it. And the reason is that our prospective memories are far more fallible than most people would believe. And this isn't an ADHD thing, this is an everybody thing. So if you just do it, then you don't have to store it in your prospective memory. Another idea here is something we've already talked about, which is to kind of reduce either mental clutter in the sense of things that you're thinking about or preoccupied with, as well as reducing external clutter and the number of activities you're involved in. That the less that's going on, the more likely you are to be able to bring forth that intention or maintain that attention until the time and place that you can do something about it. another important point in that is to beware of interruptions, because it's not only a matter of starting the activity, we also need to finish it. You know, like how many times a day do you do something and you get interrupted and then you don't necessarily come back to it, you know, and that's a very common thing these days, especially with all our technological interruptions. So, so it's not just starting, but it's really finishing it. And, you know, related to that, like if you set an alarm to do something, don't turn the alarm off. Snooze it until the task is finished, not until it's started, but until it's finished. So once it's finished and out, then you can turn the alarm off. And then just a more general kind of a strategy is that, you know, as a general statement, we're all much more likely to think of an intention when we're sort of in between things. So, you know, this is why people have all these great ideas in the shower. It's because you're kind of in between things. You know, you're showering yourself, but that takes about 5 brain cells once you've done it a million times. You don't have to think about the process of showering. You just sort of do it. So that leaves the other, you know, whatever millions of brain cells free to just kind of mull over and to think, and that's when the ideas begin to come to us. So we can use that process a little bit intentionally by kind of building in pauses every now and then in our day to sort of say, okay, what do I need to do? Like, what else? What am I not thinking about? What's fallen off my radar screen? What was it that I should be doing? What time is it now? Where am I? What am I doing? And to really kind of think about it in an intentional sort of way. So to build those pauses in, not just sort of like rely upon the course of your day to provide them. And certainly an important, you know, a really good place to do that is as you're leaving from one place to another. But now granted, you know, that means that you got to have that extra few seconds, because if you're scrambling and racing out, that's a total setup to forget to bring the things that you were supposed to bring.
So, Dr. Tuchman, if I have an intention that tomorrow I'm going to, say, call Jeff and talk to him about, oh, I don't know, the Russell Barkley show, just for instance. Are there certain things that I can do to increase the likelihood that I will act on my intention, have good prospective memory?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I'll tell you what not to do, and then I'll tell you what to do. Here's the thing not to do. Tell yourself, I should call Jeff tomorrow. Okay, well, that's okay. Now I'm done with that. Let's think about something else. That this vague idea of I should call Jeff tomorrow, it doesn't set a good mental alarm clock, because there's not much to it. You know, call him tomorrow. When? At 7 o'clock? You know, should you call him while you're making coffee, or should you call him at 11:59 when you're at the office? You know, that's still tomorrow morning. So, you know, so the way to be more likely to remember it is to get a little bit more specific about it, in the sense of saying, like, okay, I need to call Jeff tomorrow, you know, tomorrow morning. Let's think, when does Jeff tend to be available, or when do I know he is available or is not available? Let me think about what is the rest of my schedule? What does my day look like? I've got some meetings, and okay, so I'm busy then, but, you know, I've got some time from, like, 9 to 10. That might be a good time. Is that a good time to reach Jeff? Yeah, actually, I think it is. Okay, so between 9 and 10, I'm going to call him. Let me think about how, you know, let's say you're lying in bed while you're thinking about this. You can't exactly, like, scratch out a post-it note. Think about, like, okay, 9 o'clock, I'm walking into the office. So let me mentally picture myself walking into the office, seeing my phone and saying, oh, I have to make a phone call. Who is it? Jeff. I got to call Jeff. So I'm looking at the phone and I'm thinking about calling Jeff. So in other words, you're kind of building associations, in specific associations, between stuff you're going to see in your environment or things you're going to do in your environment and the intention to call Jeff or whatever it is that you might be intending to do.
You're kind of exercising your mental memory muscles, right?
Yeah,
kind of
exactly.
Like athletes will visualize themselves doing things and their muscles respond to that. So when they're actually in that situation, they do better. If I visually, I use my memory and I'm making things very specific, when that thing actually happens, it'll trigger that memory that was built into my brain, into that muscle.
Yeah, exactly.
I can't help but, like, the thing that I'm having is we're talking about triggers here, I think. And everybody, triggers come in different ways, shapes, and forms. And I know this right now is my son, my older son, when he's swim team right now, and there's a pile of stuff next to the front door every night. And that's all the stuff that he's got to take with him that he piles there. And as he walks downstairs, I think it's kind of his trigger. Like, okay, all this stuff needs to kind of go with me. So as he remembers it, he sticks it there. So he gets in his path so he remembers to take it. Is that accurate?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, basically what he's doing is he's creating external cues for his prospective memory.
And some people's triggers might be visual. Some people's triggers might be auditory, whether it's a buzzer or music or something like that. But these types of things, if you know how you, if you're a visual person and you in visual triggers, sometimes it's maybe not necessary. Maybe it's a squiggly line of design that catches your eyes that reminds you, that squiggly line means I need to go do this. Those are all kinds of triggers that you can do to put in places to remind you, or even, you know, I've done this before in past businesses where I was asleep in the middle of the night and I was like, stuff's going on in my head. I pick up the phone, I would dial my work number and leave myself a voice message. That way I could go to sleep and know, number one, I don't have to remember it in the morning. Number two, I always check my voicemail and I'll hear my message and remind me, no, I got to do that. Those
right.
are all the same type of triggers to kind of help you think about executing your intentions forward thinking, right?
Yeah, and, you know, what your son is doing by piling that stuff at the door for tomorrow morning, he's using the do-it-now strategy.
Yep.
That rather than say, okay, I need to remember tomorrow morning, you know, when I'm tired and rushing to get out the door, I need to remember to, you know, go get this and go get that and get the other. By just doing it, there's nothing to think about. But, you know, there are times when we can leave ourselves reminders that have nothing to do with the thing that we need to remember. So, for example, you know, that old thing of tie a string around your finger. Tying a piece of string around your finger is not a reminder of, you know, I better buy more string. It's, you know, it's a reminder
yep.
of a million other things. But so what happens is, though, you see the string and you go, boy, that's weird. I don't usually have string on my finger. I wonder why I have it. And then you
yep.
go, oh, yeah, I need eggs. Or, oh, yeah, I have to call Jeff. Or whatever. So, you know, you can do that in other ways. And, you know, you gave some good examples of putting a squiggle on a page or something, or, I don't know, turning a chair over
yep.
or, you know, taking your stapler and throwing it in the middle of the floor if you're on a phone call because, you know, you're going to see the stapler in the floor and say, what's that thing doing there? And that is then what triggers the idea that this means something.
Yep.
You know, there's some meaning to this stapler in the middle of the floor. And then when you see that, unless you're really kind of, you know, exhausted or brain damaged or something, that you're going to go, oh, yeah, That means I need to, I don't know, ask my wife if we can get a sitter for the weekend or something. So we're able to, you know, our attention sees the thing that's out of place, and then the rest of our kind of, you know, intellectual machinery comes up with the idea of, oh, yeah, that's associated with this.
Yep.
So now, of course, for this stuff to work, you know, this idea of kind of putting things out of place, it presumes, and this is kind of a hard thing for people who are organizationally challenged, but it presumes there's a certain amount of, like, orderliness to your environment, not like anal retentive Martha Stewart order,
yep.
but, you know, that, like, if you have a bunch of random stuff thrown all over your floor, a stapler in the middle of the floor may not actually stand out all that much. You know? So.
Yes.
So if that's the case, maybe, you know, don't put the stapler in the middle of the floor. Find something else instead. Maybe a clean office space in the middle of the floor. Maybe that's the trick.
But the what I like about what you're the bottom line is we've given some examples to kind of frame out what this looks like. But your triggers are unique to you as an individual, and everybody's triggers are different. Whether Dr. Olivardia can write with a video kind of going on the sign and you can't, it's as an individual. But we frame this out to give you an idea what some of this stuff looks like. I really want to emphasize, catch my interview with Dr. Tuckman next week on Attention Talk Videos. We talk about metacognition because we begin to talk about it, how I can't tell what Dr. Tuckman's paying attention to. Matter of fact, I think in one show I asked you, think of a tree, what are you thinking of? And you said, I'll bite. Well, I'm thinking of a bonsai tree. He's thinking of a palm tree or whatever. Nobody can really understand what you're paying attention to other than you, because you're the only one that can observe it. And if you learn these types of skills and you take them back to memory, you can actually begin to witness what your individual triggers are and then begin to manage yourself in a directed fashion as opposed to a passive fashion. So with that being said, we need to wrap some stuff up. Kirsten, you got any final questions or comments for Dr. Tuckman?
No, I don't actually. It's been really interesting tonight learning about this. I appreciate learning more about why we multitask and what it is and what it isn't and how it impacts our memory. So thank you for teaching me about that tonight.
Yeah, thanks for bringing up the question. You forced me to actually think it through a little bit more.
Awesome. Well, everybody, if you enjoyed this show, I encourage you to go back on our archives. Dr. Tuckman is one of our favorites. We did a show on what intuition is. We did a show on people with ADHD. We all need to have friends, particularly in the adult side. It was very insightful. We've talked about the difference between ADHD coaching and ADHD therapy. We've talked about the shout-out or not shout-out, when to disclose or not, which is a fascinating show. I encourage everybody to listen to that. We also did a show on what is intention. What else have we done? I'm missing a show, I think. Dr. Tuckman, can you think of it?
You know what? I can't. And actually, I have to admit, some of those, until you mentioned it, I was like, oh, yeah, I remember that now. Yeah, we've done a lot of good ones. I always enjoy the conversations because whatever thoughts I have on it going in, you know, the process of discussing always kind of, we come up with new ideas and you've refined my thinking on it. So it's always a great process to be here.
I mean, it's always fun. And I will say, next week we're doing the Attention Talk video on metacognition. I forget when the date is, but we're going to do another show on the difference between explaining ADHD or using it as an excuse. And I can't even remember. We actually have another show that we've already taped that's going to be released, and I can't even remember what that one was. I know it's good, but my memory is becoming overwhelmed right now with all the shows. So
yeah, you got too much good stuff going.
Anyway, with that, Dr. Tuckman, as always, thank you so much for coming on the show. I have learned a ton tonight. Going back to the basics of recall, working memory, and prospective memory, this is going to help me a lot. I hope it's helped everybody else out. Thanks again for coming on. For those out there that want to learn more, go visit Dr. Tuckman's website at adultadhdbook.com. And with that, Dr. Tuckman, thanks again for coming on the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Everybody, next week we've got a very interesting show. It'll be Halloween, but Dr. Joel Young will be coming on talking about chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia, and ADHD. There's not a lot of real conclusive research out there, but he's noticed some things that it's really kind of fascinating. So tune in next week for another great edition of Attention Talk Radio. Take care.
Thank you.